Greetings, everyone. This is Christopher Rudy with my second show on Cosmic Love and the Blueprint for a Golden Age. I began this show with a song that I sang for my son, Gabriel Rudy, this last Saturday. Married Aaron Kaler, and it was a really special event. I thought I'd do something different, so I did this recording in the studio. Marriage is a many splendiferous thing, and I wish them the best. Wonderful things can come out of a spiritual partnership, and that's what cosmic love is all about. At a divine mystical level, the ultimate marriage of spiritual partnerships is the marriage of souls to the law of the one, the at-one-ment or atonement, whereby we see unity within our diversity rather than divisions in our unity. This is the cosmic love that raises the standard of loving relationships, not just one's marriage partner or the children of that marriage, but also with all mankind. It's the core morality in all relationships whereby when we look for love, with love, we encourage love. Just as the kind man of God sees God in all mankind, so does the heart of love find it in one's heart of hearts to love everyone openly and freely. Or, as I like to say, love is for giving, not for getting. There are many reasons why most souls engage in the dance of relationships, not the least of which is the lessons learned about love and spiritual growth. The vertical relationships of a parent to a child is like the vertical relationships between cosmic love and humanity. As the child or humanity grows and matures both spiritually and physically, there continues to be a vertical relationship between the universal morality of divine love and the physicality of divine love in action. In its formative years, the absorbent mind of a child unconsciously mirrors and models the behavior of the parents. Parents are as gods to a newborn child. Their life depends on the nurturance of parents. And so it is with the life of humanity. It depends on a vertical relationship with cosmic love. To the extent that the parenting of humanity nurtures the Holy Spirit of love and action, to that extent will the evolutionary ascent of humanity grow and prosper with the currents and the currency of cosmic love. Or as that great soul Mahatma Gandhi once said, commerce without morality is a sin. Those who have studied the mysteries of the human aura and the energies of the seven chakras are well aware that these energies of the parent are soaked up by the absorbent mind of children in their formative years. The seven chakras organize energy and intelligence in the human body just as our core social institutions and corresponding social networks likewise organize energy and intelligence in the body of humanity. Understanding the seven chakras and their role in defining and refining intelligence is a good blueprint for understanding how our social institutions shape our collective consciousness, being, and world at large. Just as the seven chakras are the energy centers that correspond to the seven glandular centers that regulate everything in the human body, the endocrine system, so do our core institutions and corresponding social networks regulate the consciousness, being, and world of humanity at large. Those who have studied the science of the human aura, and there's some good books with a Google search for one particular on the science of the human aura that you can find on the internet, but those who have studied the science are aware that the auric field emanating from the three lower chakras are sometimes referred to as the electronic belt of misqualified energies below the heart chakra. And these are the energies that children grow up in, becoming 3D projectors of the unconscious patterns and behavioral patterns of their parents. In a similar way, children grow up to reflect not only the unconscious habit patterns of believing, thinking, feeling, and acting that their parents raised them with, but also the same unconscious habit patterns that our core social institutions shape our consciousness, being, and world with. As children become teenagers, they enter their that nether world, you might say, where they're not children anymore, but they are not adults either. They try to assert their individuality, but they typically don't know who they are yet. If they feel like they are being forced to be and do what they don't want to be or do, they may become rebellious just to assert their own individuality, doing the opposite of what their parents want for no other reason than to own their own life. Global civilization right now is like that teenager. The internet is a relatively new phenomenon of only about 16 years. And like many teenagers, it is challenging the beliefs and thinking in all our social, political, and economic institutions. As teens become adults, they hopefully learn to be self-governing. That's what responsible adults do. That's also what the internet is learning. The best government has always been self-government, how we govern ourselves. My point to this point is that there is a little child, a mature adult, and a wise parent in all of us. The big problem in human relationships is that those roles often get confused. Humans have the tendency to interject and project their habit of believing, thinking, feeling, and acting as children, adults, or parents at inappropriate times. The only problem is knowing which to be when. Different roles get mixed up. You might say that the world stage is frequented by leaders who act like headstrong teenagers who make others wrong to make themselves right. We see entire social institutions that treat their members like children, denying their role as adults and grounding them, you might say, with limited freedoms merely for challenging entrenched corruptions in those social institutions. Now, I'm not just referring to public government. It's a common problem in other institutions like public education that teaches what to think rather than how to think, or healthcare that treats symptoms rather than causes, or the mainstream media that programs propaganda rather than the truth, or an economic system that has increasingly favored the special interests of giant corporations at the expense of public regulatory agencies that are supposed to parent all institutions under the Constitution. In fact, the Constitution was created to provide a government of laws that were to be the parent lawgiver, whereby all special interests would be checked and balanced by the public's interest, what is best for all people. That is the common sense that sparked the American Revolution and the New World of America. And it's the same common sense that is shaping the new world today of instant, everywhere, interactive connection that the internet has made possible. Thomas Jefferson once said that, quote, laws are made for men of ordinary understanding and should therefore be construed by the ordinary rules of common sense. Jefferson also said that it is strangely absurd to suppose that a million human beings collected together are not under the same moral laws which bind them separately. This is even more so true today, with almost a billion people worldwide connected through social networks on the internet. What Jefferson was talking about is the golden rule of government based on the first principle of cosmic love, or what the U.S. founders referred to as God government. God is love, of course, so the words are interchangeable, as strange as a government of cosmic love may sound. These founding fathers were scholars who studied the words of the brightest people of their day and the classics, Greek and Roman. Many of these founders knew Latin, read Latin, and studied Latin. And that many of the brightest people who came out of the Enlightenment age in Europe were also studied following the introduction of the printing press. One of the favorite authors these founders often referred to is John Locke, who said, "The people cannot delegate to government the power to do anything which would be unlawful for them to do to themselves." You might say this is the golden rule of government that now needs to be applied to the modern printing press, the World Wide Web, and all our other core freedoms of speech, assembly, religion, and the right to petition government. This golden rule needs to be applied in a way that is consistent with the instant, everywhere, interactive capabilities of the internet. If that sounds revolutionary, well, we have an honored tradition of revolution that founded the United States of America. Jefferson once said that we need a revolution every 20 years to reinvent government along lines more closely aligned with the purpose for which our system of government, self-government, was created. Ready or not, there is a new global revolution in freedom and opportunity in progress. The internet has given people worldwide the freedom to know better and the opportunity to do better. The power at one's Google fingertips is accelerating the rate of change like 10 industrial revolutions and enlightenment ages all rolled into one. People worldwide want the same freedoms that many Americans take for granted. The soul of freedom is no respecter of national boundaries or political correctness or religious fanaticism. The soul of freedom embraces the same principle of cosmic love that U.S. founders championed as God government. In other words, it's a spiritual revolution and movement that is now shaping the collective consciousness of humanity. And the more that people understand the nature of this revolution and the spirit of cosmic love behind it, the more that the natural evolution of planetary consciousness will naturally harmonize and heal the dissonance, divisions, and dis-ease in the collective soul of humanity. The important thing to understand about this revolution is that the function of global humanity follows the form of it, and cosmic love, the spirit behind this revolution, creates the form. It's all a matter of spirit over mind and mind over matter. If there's no mind of a spiritual bearing, nothing matters with any spirit worthy of the soul of humanity. This brings me to my feature story, a true story of my experience on Capitol Hill back in 1974. I'm more a visionary than a storyteller, but sometimes a true story is the best way to convey the highest idea of constitutional freedom that speaks truth to power. By a bizarre sequence of events, I found myself giving a keynote address to 10 agencies of the federal government on Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C. It was a future summit to brainstorm on the possible futures for the 13-year bicentennial era, from 76 to 89, when the Constitution was ratified. The year was 1974, the month of November, and I was 25 years old. To give a flashback to that time, the Vietnam War had recently ended, and while yet burdened by so much war insanity, the public's conscience was shifting from war-making to peace-building. There was a nationwide release of hope, faith, and charity that looked forward to a better future. I'd been to Washington, D.C. a few years earlier to demonstrate against the Vietnam War, and as a photojournalist, I attempted to capture the spirit of two major demonstrations, perhaps the first of the million-man variety in the U.S. This time I had a much smaller audience, but quality made up for quantity. The place was the Science and Astronautics Chamber of the Rayburn Building and on Capitol Hill, and I gave the last speech at this three-day futures summit sponsored by the World Futures Society and the Committee for the Future. Present were directors of the United States Communications Agency, the United States Information Agency, the American Revolutionary Bicentennial Commission, and leaders of seven other federal agencies that were attending to see what the 13-year bicentennial era from Declaration to Constitution might look like. Can you spell revolution? Anyway, do you realize the revolutionary changes the world was going through back then, with the accelerated changes brought on globally by the instant emotional connections of satellite TV reporting of global tragedies and triumph? Do you think the whole world didn't mourn the death of JFK, Martin Luther King, and Robert Kennedy? Are you aware how the world changed with the moon landing that showed how small our world had become from a lunar perspective? Flash forward to the faster acceleration of changes following the bicentennial era. Consider the mind-boggling change for old-timers regarding the Internet. Look how the whole world mourned 9/11 disaster in solidarity with the American people. Think how fast the world woke up to what really happened on 9/11. It took a few years, but it took 50 years for the whole world to find out that Pearl Harbor was an inside job, too. Net reality has become the front lines for freedom of speech, assembly, press, and the right to petition government. The future of freedom requires we learn from the past, or we are condemned to repeat it. And that learning curve is accelerating very fast because of the instantaneous nature of global communications. But back to my story. So here I was speaking before the TV cameras, recording this futures summit. On my BBS radio webpage, you can link to a picture of this in a synopsis. Before me were many independent visionaries, futurists, NASA scientists, unified field theorists, and future-looking representatives in government agencies. Earlier that year, in 1974, for a month in June, I attended Buckminster Fuller's World Game Studies workshop at the University of Pennsylvania. Early on, my views were well-received, and I was invited to give a lecture to the group. I positioned the idea of World Game around the theme of all problems in our all-connected world are communication problems. The director of this workshop was sufficiently moved by the response of my talk that he feared I'd take over the agenda for the rest of the workshop. But I had no such plans. A book was produced on our research, Energy, Earth, and Everyone, that dealt with hydrogen conversion technologies that would replace fossil fuels. The reason it hasn't happened, of course, isn't because the know-how, the science, is not available. The economics and politics, I've learned, are far more complex than the science. But again, I digress. One person at the World Game appreciated the world-healing communications revolution I was talking about, invited me to attend the Future Summit in the fall and present my views there. He was an influential member with the organizers of the Future Summit, so I prepared 10 papers to give to the 10 agency directors that attended per his request. As the Future Summit was concluding, it was this friend who got everyone's attention and introduced my concluding address. I spoke behind the podium in the middle of the chamber with the Great Seal of the United States prominently on the front of it. My message was simple. I only spoke about 10 minutes. I explained how cable TV was wiring the nation with satellite downlinks to cable TV stations. Congress had mandated public access to the new cable TV medium with channels required for public access on all cable TV networks. I explained how the revolution, the bicentennial revolution, could be celebrated with an electronic upgrade of freedom of the press with this new printing press that cable television represented. I also explained how freedom of speech could be upgraded with use of the new portable video cameras that had just come out, Sony backpack portable video cameras, whereby people could originate their own multimedia programs with help at the public access studios, explaining how video is more friendly than film because you can't make a mistake. You can just erase over errors until the video speaks for itself, you know, however you want. We kind of take that for granted now with video, but back then it was a revolutionary idea. I also explained to this group how freedom of assembly could be upgraded with replay of these locally originated programs over the public access networks on the local cable television systems. And this is where it gets interesting. The mix of all these elements at the heart of the spirit of revolution that forged the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. What I explained was the new interactive potential of freedom of speech, not just an individual's creation of original programming, but the instant evaluation of the program by everyone in the assembly, the people watching the program on their home TVs. This is what the founders understood, the U.S. founders understood, as town hall meetings, because that was the only way to meet and interact at a grassroots level back then. But interactive cable television could change that. Indeed, every interactive network in the whole world could be an electronic town hall meeting. The point I simply made was the need for an electronic upgrade of a horse and buggy system of representation that would make government responsive and accountable to the purpose for which it serves, of, by, and for the people. In other words, how we the people, through the new interactive media of cable TV, could celebrate the American Revolution with a space age upgrade of what was virtually a technologically obsolete legislative system, improving accountability to constitutional principles with an interactive process that provides a beacon of freedom for the entire world that was fast becoming a global village, a term coined by the futurist and visionary Marshall McLuhan. Excuse me. There was one key problem I explained. How do you get 100 or a million people responding to the same program at the same time without creating noise? you can't without a real-time, instant, moment-to-moment system of response ability. Obviously, you can't expect people to be responsible for their lives, their government, without a means for responsibility that is consistent with technology of the day. Common sense would say that the best way to encourage responsibility for government is to upgrade our horse and buggy system of response and representation. What is needed, I explained, is a standardized framework of evaluation criteria that reflected and perfected the core first principles of the Constitution itself. This frame of reference, an interactive interface for mass-to-mass communication, could provide context and meaning for collective response during public discourse on any issue. People could both originate and evaluate programs and then originate new programs that highlighted the consensus of consciousness referenced by the evaluation criteria of the standardized interface. I explained how that evaluation criteria would have to be truly universal in the language of consciousness itself. In other words, an exquisite metaphor for those archetypal maps of consciousness that have provided cultural DNA throughout recorded history. To the extent it frames a prevailing awareness of the laws and languages of consciousness at the quintessential foundation of self-governance, it would involve and evolve our individual and collective conscience in the way that would distinguish a natural revolution in higher consciousness, and in the process would raise the standard for truly spiritual God government that U.S. founders aspired to. In summary, I explained how the new cable TV technology for informed choice could provide an upgraded information processing system for responsibility and accountability that fulfilled the pure intent of the Constitution. I call this electronic upgrade of our core freedoms a process of information's ecology that would recycle general knowledge in the way that empowers specific wisdom for a global revolution in higher consciousness. My final point was that the bicentennial would ideally celebrate the American Revolution through upgrading these first principles of the Constitution that make responsible representative government work. I explained how the installed and operational interactive cable TV technology provided a vehicle for mass-to-mass communication as has never been possible for humanity. I emphasize that the interactive interface for integrating our core freedoms in the Bill of Rights would provide a more universal language of constitutional virtue, principles, and processes at the heart of genuine freedom. I concluded by emphasizing that all our social, political, and economic problems are at heart communication problems, and that an electronic upgrade of our core freedoms is the best way to celebrate the spirit of the American Revolution. When I was finished speaking, I offered 10 papers for the 10 agencies. There was dead silence. No one moved for the longest time. I was getting nervous. I didn't realize I nailed it. All I knew, with the summit quickly adjourned, was that the 10 agency heads who came forward would not look me in the eye. No one wanted to talk with me. And then a junior college vice president from New York City came up to me and said, "You know, the problem with this is," pausing as his eyes got wider, "is that this would eliminate bureaucracy, and you're not going to hear from these agencies of the federal government." Naive as I was, that was quite a shock to me. I didn't realize that government had become a growth industry. You would have thought that a definitive way to restore restraint and accountability for government growth would be welcome. But I was too innocent of the way things worked, and apparently I had inadvertently threatened the agency heads who wanted more power and growth, not less. At least, apparently, it was a challenge to them. It didn't really sink in that the bicentennial planners didn't want change until I went home to Ohio and heard clicking on my phone whenever I picked it up to make a call. Never heard that before. Never occurred to me that our government had already been infiltrated by big business in collusion with government agencies. I didn't know that government had become a protection racket for oil industries, legal and illegal drugs, drug-based health care, military-industrial contractors, soulless education, and the giant media conglomerates who represented the secret power elite societies who want to continue profiting from their monopolies in all the major markets. Didn't have a clue. I was indeed naive. But it still doesn't occur to a lot of people that government growth and power is out of control of public accountability. Many can't see the solution because they don't see the problem, or they feel too overwhelmed with the scope of the problem, or just want to believe that government represents our best interests, that they're here to help us. But if the system is corrupt, how do you work within the system to make it accountable to the purpose for which it was created? This may all seem rather irrelevant to current reality, but this dilemma was never more relevant now with a modern computer, which is like the head end of a cable TV station that can connect with the whole world through satellites, and now the Internet. Back then, I was talking about the capability of interactive cable TV. Now that interactive capability is on the Internet. The head end of the cable TV system and your public access studio is now your desktop or laptop computer. Desktop video, blogs, and podcasts are reinventing town hall meetings on tens of thousands of network communities, Yahoo groups, and chat groups worldwide. But still, there is no universal interface that involves and evolves our individual and collective conscience in the process. What do you think will happen when the browser interface for connecting on the internet shifts from a user-centric connection with the outer world to a user-centering connection that cultures the heart and soul of humanity? That's what will happen when the language of consciousness at the quintessential heart of self-governance involves and evolves our individual and collective consciousness with the frequency of holy compassion, cosmic love, as infrequently. All of our core freedoms could be upgraded, but are not, simply because monopoly forces and giant corporations have a vested interest in owning and controlling our government, our core institutions, and in their view, the physical and human resources of the planet. It may sound funny that cosmic love is the solution, but at the same time, those who have read the links on the BBS radio homepage on the love model and have understood the processes of consciousness that are framed by the pure geometry models, you'll get a sense of what I'm talking about. And think about this. How global civilization has hit the wall of old models of profit and power that force compliance to social institutions that no longer serve the purpose for which they were created. Something dramatic has to change. Consider what a constitution-based upgrade of our core freedoms would look like. How would it fulfill the U.S. Founders' revolution in self-governing informed choice, as was the pure intent of U.S. Founders? Is it true that informed choice is the core freedom that all our other freedoms are based on? Are you aware that all people in our new global village want the same freedoms that U.S. Founders championed? Would you agree that universal love as a user-centering process is a higher standard for representing all people in our global village? Consider how a system of electing representatives of, by, and for the people can work as a system of cultural DNA that involves and evolves the virtues that all people hold sacred. Consider how this system can resurrect the pure intent of U.S. Founders, whereby the best and brightest can rise to a system of information's ecology that recycles the common sense of universal love as the standard for the unity of kind men among mankind. If all problems are at heart communication problems, then a definite solution would obviously center and connect the angels of our better nature to uplift, guide, and direct the heart and soul of humanity. Now, that's a revolutionary concept. Common sense, providing the best and brightest leaders for America. Indeed, it was Thomas Paine's common sense that sparked the American Revolution. And heaven knows it would be an upgraded version of common sense that would provide leadership based on virtue and talent that speaks for itself, to an interactive interface of a cosmic love nature. This was true 32 years ago when I was speaking truth to power on Capitol Hill. And it's even more true today with the technological advances that make it possible with personal computers and the Internet. If we truly believe in freedom and opportunity for all mankind, how can we deny the opportunity to raise the torch of liberty that will shine for the world, as America once did? Common sense would say that the future of civilization may well depend on the resurrection of a virtue-centric process at the heart of informed choice, representative government, and the holistic healing of all our social, political, and economic institutions. I've had a lot of time to think about that since my experience on Capitol Hill. The heart of the matter, the heart of the Constitution, is still the interactive means to synergize our core freedoms in the Bill of Rights. It's still an interactive interface process that will define, refine, combine, synergize, and shine our God-given gifts and talents that made America great in the first place. I once read that the greatest failing of modern civilization is the failure to link the light, link these gifts and talents, these God-given gifts and talents of humanity. And this is what I'm referring to when I refer to information psychology and a process that would involve and evolve more light in terms of the language of consciousness itself, and how to bring that process that would culture, I refer to cultural DNA, that would culture our awareness, our consciousness of how we are conscious. It's like psychofeedback as compared to biofeedback. With biofeedback, they discovered that once you become aware of any involuntary, unconscious body process, not only do you desire to control it, you can't resist self-control. And this is what I'm referring to in terms of a process that would culture self-control with psyche feedback, you know, the feedback of consciousness as we become more conscious individually and collectively of how we are conscious, and make that the criteria, that conscience, make that the criteria for the communication process that define and our consciousness being a world. If the dominant global superpower doesn't do it, who will? If it doesn't begin with us, as in the United States, where will it begin? If not us, then who will raise the torch of liberty to light the way to this 4th of July spirit of revolution? In short, if the United States doesn't get its revolutionary act together, we're toast. We didn't celebrate our revolutionary heritage, which is much more than token 4th of July fireworks during the bicentennial. Perhaps it wasn't time, but if not now, then when? Freedom of conscience is the divine right expressed at the heart of the Bill of Rights through freedom of religion. If there's not freedom of, by, and for conscientious common sense, we don't have any freedom at all. Without this higher conscience of moral virtue being represented with the responsibility that encourages responsibility for good government, look what happens with the abuse of power at the top. Most of the civilized world has the lowest opinion of U.S. government policies in history. Freedom of religion was never meant to deny the core Christian principle of divine love. But this is what happens when government becomes God at the expense of a God of love. If we don't represent true spirituality at the heart of all other freedoms, we become slave to politically correct BS as a belief system that is morally wrong. Without virtue at the heart of it, values become corrupt. The system becomes broken. People fear the government, and tyranny gets a foothold. It is the aspiration of genuine freedom to be regulated, governed, and increasingly perfected by by divine order, a constitution of laws that represent what is best for all people, not giant corporate interests that put their profits before the public. It naturally follows that the heart of that constitution would honor all our other freedoms from the top down, with spiritual intent at the top that at least checks and balances the use and abuse of power. As I explained, our system of self-government is based on responsibility through good information. Without well-informed choice, with virtue-centric interactive processes that culture truth and love, government and media powers will keep informed choice from the people rather than of, by, and for the people. Propaganda replaces principle. Might overpowers right. Subversion of the golden rule becomes he who has the gold, black gold, and moneyed power makes the rules. You can't expect people to be responsible for their lives or their government without responsibility that is consistent with the communication capabilities of the day. Today, that capability is interactive, but the corporate media is not. It's one-way programming, their way. They rewrite history and reframe every issue to force their agenda. It's an agenda for furthering corporate interests, not public interests. I'm not young and innocent anymore, and I'd like to think that I learned fast. But I don't learn fast, but I do learn well. I still believe in the core principles in the Constitution, but I'm realistic about the collusion of federal government with giant corporations in an incestuous relationship of protection rackets, basically. Even back in 1974, there was a revolving door of directors between U.S. regulatory agencies and the corporations they were supposed to be regulating. I didn't know that the fix was in. In recent years, I learned that the inspired author, Dr. Scott Peck, author of A World Waiting to Be Born, left government work also because he realized that the fix was in. Now it is severely broken that dramatic change must come one way or the other. I've been diligent in seeking a way that harmonizes and heals the core problem. Within months after my experience on Capitol Hill, I discovered Jeremy Rifkin's People's Bicentennial Commission, a people's version of the government's American Revolutionary Bicentennial Administration. And Rifkin's People's Bicentennial Commission explained how corporate tyranny was the new King George. That was a real eye-opener, and I got all their material to follow up on that. Let me get my place here. That movement obviously didn't get much press in the corporate media because it stood for the U.S. founders' principles of checks and balances. The giant corporations have increasingly usurped, rewriting laws that give corporations the same protection of individuals, but without the accountability that all individuals have. Basically, this has corrupted the justice branch of government as well as the executive branch. They have bought off the legislative branch, and they have infiltrated regulatory agencies. Just look how blatant is the corporate collusion with government today. Not just Enron, Big Oil, and Bush's re-election campaigns financed by corporate media moguls. Not just Rumsfeld and Aspartame or Cheney and Halliburton. The major TV media are embedded with military-industrial contractors. Embedded reporters spin the news. Government ad agencies create fake news, and Pentagon departments fabricate intelligence. All to make a killing on war with no accountability to the public's interest for ending the war. It's out of control. People have always said I was ahead of my time in addressing all this with a, so to speak, definitive solution. And I always thought I was right on time. But perhaps it was a larger cycle that we all had to be on time for. I believe that time is now, that now is the best time because there's a critical mass of people worldwide with a new common sense that wants to end the madness and reboot civilization along more enlightened lines of what I refer to as cosmic love or the love model. How long will it take for the American people to resurrect the Constitution with an electronic space age upgrade for the family of man in our global village? There are several good reasons why that time is now. We're all connected. Those reading this online or hearing this radio show, with an instant everywhere connection, it's unique. It's only been made possible in the last several years. It's a new world as profound in its potential as was the new world of America that U.S. founders were pioneering. We're all together in this connection as one community of many community networks. Enlightened global citizens aspire to being freely informed and upward mobile with pure intent for the highest and best use of the Constitution of First Principles for freedom and justice for all. I like to think of that as cosmic love. I guess I have enough time. I do. I guess I have enough time to go into what happened next after returning to Troy, Ohio. I was quickly enlightened as to what was really going on with corporate America by Jeremy Rifkin's People's Bicentennial Commission. And I went and spoke to a group in the Midwest, a few states over, that where Jeremy was organizing one of the conventions of the People's Bicentennial Commission. And I had a chance to connect at that meeting with other people who had been writing and working with this understanding of problem and solution. And I met a guy there who came up to me after I addressed the entire group and worked with him. He came back to Troy, Ohio, and he worked with me, and we organized a nonprofit organization called Community Video. It was a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing community-owned and regulated cable TV to Troy, Ohio. Community-owned and regulated cable TV, a nonprofit gatekeeper group that could use community funds that was available from the sale of Troy, Ohio's power plant to develop cable television. And this is what we basically were promoting and encouraging. And on July 4th, 1976, the Bicentennial of the Revolution, we had our cable sites newsletter together with a survey in it that we worked with two Boy Scout troops. I was an Eagle Scout and was able to get two Boy Scout troops to distribute about 5,000 of these newsletters to every home subdivision in Troy, Ohio. Afterwards, we went to the city park and churned up some homemade ice cream, actually several loads of it, to feed everyone. We had a picnic on the 4th of July. But what was in that cable site's newsletter was the overview, basically, of what I was talking about with the capability of an upgrade of our freedoms of speech, assembly, petition, government, through public access, and what public access would look like, and how it could basically represent the public directly through the origination and the evaluation of programs with subscriber response terminals that, in my mind, and I didn't go into it in the cable site's newsletter, but I published a separate newsletter explaining how this love model would work as a universal language that represented the language of consciousness itself, that would involve and evolve consciousness within the community networks. Troy, Ohio back then was about the size, same size as Philadelphia at the time that the Declaration of Independence was written. And the experience that I had from the survey that we included in this newsletter was sufficient to then lobby city council for them to rewrite an ordinance on cable television whereby different cable company franchises could apply for the franchise. So the process began where cable companies began bidding for developing cable television, which Troy didn't have at that time. and the intent was to work with city council and through the media to inform the public as to the cable system that provided the best public access package for public access to video origination equipment, where they could take video cameras out into the community, make their own presentations, come back and edit those programs in the studio, and have electronic town hall meetings with the public. Well, it was interesting what happened. We did succeed to the extent that the best cable package for public access was accepted, and cable television was developed. It was not a community-owned and regulated system. There was no interest from city council in using community funds to develop cable TV that was non-profit. They wanted to defer to a profit-based corporation, even though there was expertise in town with people in town that had developed other cable television systems. And those individuals created their own company and put together the best package for public access that city council agreed to. And it was interesting that with some of the lobbying got rather heated in the community. There was some expose articles of special interest. Blue suede shoe representatives of some of these big cable companies trying to woo city councilmen. And, of course, I was rather involved with that. And because of that, when cable television was developed, they wouldn't let me near the public access studios, which was interesting. And then, as has happened in so many cable stations around the United States, the public access studios were hamstrung by quite often it was city council who had say in the matter, or the cable companies themselves, that they limited access. They limited public access in numerous ways. And of all the thousands or tens of thousands of cable TV systems across the United States, there's only a very small percentage, as I've seen, as small as 33% back then. Now it may be up to 10%. But public access to cable television systems is not the rule, even though Congress legislated that all cable systems were to provide public access channels. And how that has been blocked and how that has been resisted is a statement as to the forces of media control that are operating in the country. The point being with all this is that the whole system now has changed to the point where everyone's computer or laptop, as I mentioned earlier, is like, virtually like, the head end of a cable TV system. And this issue of who controls access to different networks and how, of all the networks within networks that have been created, how information is organized in formation, what the organizational principles are whereby good information is qualified and recycled in the collective consciousness, in these social networks that are ubiquitous now in our global village. The issue still boils down to how to best organize information whereby the first principles of value and virtue are qualified, crystallized, and what I refer to as geometrized, with the geometry of first principles that reference the frames of reference for the processes of consciousness itself. In other words, it's coming to the point where there's a public realization that all our problems are the communication problems and process whereby the representation of freedoms as sought by people in all countries is still being blocked and resisted by paradigm paralysis of powers that be, social, political, and economic, that are keeping informed choice from the public rather than of, by, and for the public. So I'd like to conclude with basically a hopeful note that the to ignite this vision of virtue for the victory of freedom and opportunity within the communication networks that define and shape our consciousness, being, and world. And for those listening, to look at the links regarding the Love Model and consider with the different projects that could make this possible, a holistic healing of our social, political, and economic institutions, and how that can work, and consider how this process, the vision of it alone, can be the catalyst for a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, to conclude, we're only got a few weeks, a couple weeks now into July 4th. Hope you all have a good 4th of July and remember the spirit for which it was created, and realize that the revolution begins within everyone's own heart, mind, and soul, and that the bottom line in this process is quite simply to love with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul and your netizen neighbor in our global village as thyself. If you look at the links on the BBS Radio webpage for this program, there will be more information regarding this process. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and those who are interested in more information and what you can do, what can be done, please contact me at the email address on the webpage, or email me at geonotes, G-E-O-N-O-T-E-S, at mcn.net. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you in a few weeks. Bye-bye.
Dr. Richard Moore, you're listening to the Universal Spiritual Reverend Leilani.